crime novels by like Hammett and the other guys that I can't remember right off the top of my head, which I feel really bad for. I'm going to look it up so I can sound smarter on this next take.
Yay, good thing we can do that.
The magic of podcasting.
Magic of good editors?
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Fangs and Thoughts. As always, I'm Ocean.
I'm Voice.
I'm Yanara.
And I'm Roland.
And it's Monday.
Such a Monday.
It has been a Monday's Monday.
All we need now is the pouring rain.
I like rain.
The harsh lighting.
I like harsh lighting.
And everyone in silhouettes are like the really stark half light where there's no gray but just dark.
And maybe some scotch.
Then we need a scotch. We need an office with monogrammed Ocean on the door. So that we could walk up to it, knock gently, or would that be harshly? I think gently works better.
I'm wishing I could just put this whole episode to like some just slow jazz club music.
Why would you not? Just be like, hello!
Did they ever do like war of Garfield against Monday? Because that would be actually pretty
they did.
Cool.
They did a they? Garfield noir.
Yeah.
It was a part of his seven lives, I think.
Yes, it was.
But was it against Monday?
No.
The inevitability of Mondays.
There was a skirt involved.
Okay.
Man, you all sound like you had to work today.
Shut up.
Someone had to drive.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had like 12 hours of podcast. I was good.
But anyways, today we're talking about noir.
Ocean's stupid book.
But anyways, today we're talking about noir. And Ocean's stupid book.
Yay! Ocean's stupid book is coming out.
Now, unlike horror, which turned out to be a very in-depth question and answer, noir, I think, is, at least to me, a little bit harder to define. But that's because noir is not my genre, much like horror was not Ocean's genre.
I tried to write noir. It didn't end well.
I think there's a large key difference between horror and noir is kind of the range. Horror is much larger, while noir is much more niche.
True.
It's a much smaller type. You'd almost be like horror and mystery can kind of line up. But, you know, you want to think like Lovecraftian is more like a niche to horror as noir would be some sort of like niche of mystery.
It's mystery,
but,
yeah.
But that's to say that noir is mystery, which it doesn't always have to be. That's kind of a common misconception.
I've always thought it was a detective type of movie or story.
That's the thing. So what is noir? Let's just jump in there. Like a lot of people, they see noir as, you know, the classic black-white monologuing detective, you know, cigarette smoke, whiskey, slow jazz. That's noir.
Generically, I would agree, yeah.
That's one type of noir. That's kind of a theme or a very prominent setting of noir, as much as a haunted house is a scene or whatever for horror.
Yeah.
You know, we see a lot of that because it really mixes in with what some people call hard-boiled crime novels. And the two run very, very close to each other so much that you could almost say they're the similar things.
Yeah.
But again, noir doesn't have to involve crime.
Yeah. Well, until I had read Supernatural Noir, I didn't really think of it. Otherwise, I didn't really think of it in terms other than the stereotype that you had just mentioned. And then after I read that anthology, it was, oh, okay, no, this makes sense there, because there were other stories in there that were noir that had nothing to do with the detectives and whatnot. Some successful, some not successful.
Oh, yeah, and one of the things I'm really proud of with Inhuman X is that, although I'd say maybe about half the stories, I think, are detective stories, the other half are not, which makes me happy. And we also got a lot of other good stories that sadly didn't make it in that were also not noir, and I thank everyone for those, too. But what the biggest thing I tried to capture in this anthology is the variety of noir. Like, you can just have a detective mystery and just have an anthology full of that, but that's not really as much a genre as much as it is detective mysteries with dark, gritty settings.
Yeah.
So
you could just do your mystery and have it be Murder, She Wrote.
Exactly.
Though Murder, She Wrote as a noir would be fantastic.
Who's the actress on that?
Angela Lansbury.
Yeah, I could just see her sitting with a smoke by her typewriter, just types out a few words, strikes up another match. You know, a lot of the, it comes from two angles. We have the, you know, the hard-boiled novels by like Hammett and Chandler and Marlowe. No, Marlowe's one of Chandler's characters. And then at the same time, we have film noir, which is where we get that black, white, very, I'm trying to remember the angles, like very still shots, which is where you get the film noir. And it's kind of a combination of those two, I feel, but.
I was just looking it up. Noir fiction is defined as, or actually is also known as Roman noir, is a literary genre closely related to hardboil, with a distinction that the protagonist is not a detective, but instead either a victim, a suspect, or a perpetrator. Other common characteristics include the self-destructive qualities of the protagonist. A typical protagonist of the noir fiction is dealing with the legal, political, or other system that is no less corrupt than the perpetrator by whom the protagonist is either victimized and or is victimizing on a daily basis. Leading to a lose-lose situation.
Yeah.
Which I think that's the thing that a lot of noir comes from, is the fact that it very much is a, this isn't a sunny world. This is very much a depression era, downtrodden. You're not going to win anything. You're going to lose.
Yeah. I don't think all of that needs to be combined. I think you can take elements from that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, very, very sure a lot of noir stories are very cynical. That's definitely cynical, real, in a sense that they're over graphic, usually sometimes pulpy, you know, excessive violence, excessive sexual tones. Like a large part of what I find separates noir from just your normal mystery thriller is the characters themselves. You know, Sherlock Holmes, you know, there's a lot of murder mysteries in there, but I wouldn't really call them noir.
Yeah.
Isn't that just a straight up mystery?
Mm-hmm. But you look at like the Sherlock Holmes that Downey Jr. did, and people, there are tones of noir in that.
Yeah.
Because we're actually seeing his character like slowly
deteriorating.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, is that more noir? Is that just more what Robert Downey Jr. brings to the table?
I think it's a bit of both. It's also Guy Ritchie. definitely you have these characters that are pushed so far to the brink that they become completely ambiguity to their morals. Anything they do is with strict vengeance. They're blinded, they're corrupted. It's just a downward spiral. It's been debated, can you have a happy ending in a noir? Because a lot of the times, and this is also why you have characters that are there, you know, you have your anti-heroes or your femme fatales, is because they're just usually these dark, gritty characters who are fighting against something bigger than themselves, like the law or the mafia, or just, you know, a corrupted governor who has more power in his pinky than anyone else could hope for. You know, you can take them out, but I'm still here, you know. And so there's a lot of these aspects that you can be added together to make a noir. But yeah, definitely like the things that come to my mind again, like corruption, downward spirals. Like, although it didn't say like it's usually not detectives, it seems that we now have detectives, but they're more PI.
Well,
that's fine. Which again, it goes kind of back to the anti-hero. Because they're now pushing against the law. They're making their own rules. A lot of the times, you know, they've got that police sergeant that knows them and is, you know, don't do what I think you're gonna do, but they do it anyways because I want to get justice. And in their own sense, they become blinded. They're like, I can't let this happen.
With apparently, as I was just reading further on. The detective noir is an American thing. It's actually being referred to as American noir.
Cool.
And it was done by Burnett as well as blah, 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 Hammett and Kane. So, and it was very much because it featured a detective led into that, and then has further been enhanced nowadays with things like The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo and the game L.A. Noir.
Yeah.
Which are bringing back that kind of genre.
And we've even had movies recently, like the game, the other... the movie The Game was slightly noirish, but the one I was really thinking of is Seven. Seven's very, very done in a noir style.
Very much so.
Yeah. You know, because it takes this detective that's high hopes and good family and just slowly brings him down.
Does that mean Batman's noir?
Batman has a lot of noir-like stories.
Well, I was just
Batman's
thinking,
really set up for it, right?
Yeah.
Bruce of...
He's a vigilante, which not necessarily an anti-hero.
He's got the friend who's the detective who says, you shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
And then the character says, I'm not going to do what you think I'm going to do. I'm going to do something worse. And he goes and does it anyway.
Yeah. And if you see a lot of his stories, you know, like Alfred's there like, you shouldn't do this. Or get some help, and he's like, I'm doing it on my own. I have to do this. I can't.
For revenge.
Well, and
justice.
I just finished Wayne of Gotham by Tracy Hickman, and he writes it. He doesn't write in necessarily the nitty-grittiness of noir, but a lot of the elements that are in the book are noir elements, because Bruce literally deteriorates as the novel goes on, because he discovers more and more about how corrupt his dad was. And then as this is happening, he does things like firing Alfred, and he talks about like his body's deteriorated to the point where he almost needs this powered exoskeleton to move around and to fight for longer than a couple minutes, because his body's just so bruised and beaten up.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of it, it's not a happy ending.
Well, yeah, noir.
But, yeah, like, You get these mystery incident detectives, and they work so well, I think, with these kind of parts that we've discussed, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's not the detective that's pushing against the bounds, and the detective then usually is the one that's going, like, they're usually doing two things, I find, and one is, I'm going to get them no matter what. And they'll just push themselves and push people so hard that they'll just get what they want to get to the bottom of something. Or it's the reverse, and they're going, how could someone do something this horrible?
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and one of the things that I've been, because I was just thinking about novels that I've read, and to write my story for the one RF anthology there that was cyberpunk, I read a lot of cyberpunk stories, short stories and full-length novels. And the thing that I'm just thinking back on it, a lot of those are very noir-themed, because noir works very well with the dystopian future that cyberpunk puts forward.
Oh, yeah.
And
I love cyberpunk noirs, you know?
And there's a certain flavoring to it that you're just...
You've already got the gritty background of a dystopia, so it just bleeds right into, like, something noir.
Yeah.
It's already dark. It's already cruel. People are already suffering in a world like that.
The stage is set.
Yeah. It doesn't take much to push it in.
Yeah.
Well, that's much like the movie we watched with you last night.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Dread. Dread is definitely a noir, I'd say.
Well, that one kind of had a happy ending. I mean, happy ending as in not the main character.
They survived.
Yeah.
That is the happy ending.
They survived to do shift number two.
Yeah, that's exactly it. They're like, wow, we took down a big drug dealer. And that's like... not even a drop in the bucket of the entire world that they live in.
It was Tuesday.
Yeah, that's what I love, is because at the end of that movie, you realize he didn't just do something that he'll be telling people for years on end, like, remember that day I took down peach trees? No, it was like, yeah, it was just a drug bust, as he tells his chief. It's like, that was just another day in the life of Dread.
Yeah, that's true, especially because when they pan out and show you that one little... That peace trees was...
Yeah.
Well, that looks like a big deal when you're up close, but when you pan out, oh, look, there's
Mega
like
City
thousands
One.
Of them other.
Yeah, when Mega City 1 is from Boston to New York, I think.
Yeah.
That's how big, and they're saying that crime, they only get to, you know, stop 6% of crime.
Yeah.
So, you know, what are you going to do?
Keep slogging away in that meat grinder.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Because if they respond to 6%, it doesn't exactly mean that they...
That's a good point, that they respond to 6%. That doesn't mean they actually fix 6%. Well, that's even bleaker.
Yay!
There we go. One book series that did, I think, the noir thing really well was Necropolis by Michael Dembski. Mm-hmm. Basically, people are resurrecting into, basically they're rising from the graves and basically reverse aging. And the more they hurt their bodies, the faster they turn to youth.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
And then, of course, then they die when they become fetuses, etc., etc. And the main thing is the detective who got shot and killed, and he wakes up again to find out that, you know, there was this big conspiracy around his death. But the way that the world has gone is that, much like we do now, where we go in cycles of fashion and music and whatnot, where, you know, that what was popular in the 70s might be popular this year, what was popular in the 80s might be popular next year. With them, it's basically the architecture, the cars, the weaponry, everything. And when the world he wakes up is like the 50s and, well, 20s to the, yeah, one of those eras. But basically it's very much, you know, so you have your handgun that's looks like a standard revolver, but it's actually a plasma gun that fires plasma rounds that do significantly more damage. But I just really liked, again, it's cyberpunk mixing in the noir elements, because you have that detective who's literally nothing to lose because he's already lost everything. He's already died once.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's trying to unravel things.
Doesn't Aeon Flux do something similar to that?
Aeon Flux? Yeah.
I guess it's been a very, very long time since I've seen the movie or the cartoon or anything, or read the comic, but
Aeon Flux is not really in a dystopia as much as it's more supposedly a utopia, and she's rebelling against it, which is slightly noir, yes.
Because she sees the dystopian in it, and she's mm-hmm. fighting needlessly.
The one suggestion I wanted to bring up was the anime Psycho Pass is actually a very good
cyberpunk noir.
What it is their guns basically rate how you know criminal a person is. So when you point it at someone, they're like, oh, their criminal score is this, and then it allows you to, you know, kill them or dish out punishment depending on that.
And those that have a rating are also like the people who are inclined to commit crimes are the dogs. And they'll be sent out to like actually do the dirty work, while the detective is they're trying to keep them from becoming like criminal.
Huh. And along this path they find people that are doing criminal acts. Like they're killing people in front of them, but their guns are like, no, these people are fine. And so they have to rebel against their own system to find a solution.
This is your best friend. No, he just shanked someone, like, in front of me with a broken coffee mug.
They're like, this person is fine.
This person is fine.
Gun turn off.
Gun off now. Thanks, bye.
But
has a low level, and every time that that person is talking, and then shanks them, it's like, oh, we'll just go down to zero. We're going to disable this gun now. Have a good day.
Poop.
Another difference I see between a mystery novel and, like, a noir novel is the mystery itself. In a mystery novel, you're more expected to be given clues generally so that you can try to solve the mystery by the time you get to the end. Noir, that's not often the case.
Well, you don't even need a mystery in a noir series. Mm-hmm. In Supernatural Noir, there was, I would say, probably about half the stories in there didn't have mysteries. It was just, you know, a case or something where it was just the resolution was that hard decision where it's like, eh.
Well, you look at the latest Black Sad that came out. Is it Armorilla, I believe? I can't see it because there's the laundry basket blocking my bookshelf. But
I'm really behind on Black Sad. So.
Yeah. In it, there's not as much a mystery as he's trying to track down this one guy. But we're also seeing the story from that guy. So there's clearly not really a mystery to it. And we're more interested, again, in those characters. The characters are what really brings out the noir. Because you're seeing this guy pushed to the edge, and he's making these decisions because of this. He's fringing out, he's, you know, freaking out. He's doing crazy things because of this. And Black Sad's just kind of tracking him down. At the same time, you know, there's sometimes they give you the mysteries where, you know, it's not... They're going along finding clues, but they'll eventually reach a point where they just confront the guy, and then they just kind of dump the rest of the mystery on you.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it was this guy because this, almost Sherlock Holmes fashion.
Oh, yeah. You know. Okay. The big reveal.
Yeah. In the sense that you probably wouldn't have figured this out. I'm just going to let you know now.
Yeah.
Because, again, the mystery isn't always the biggest thing in a war. We're looking at the characters. We're looking at the motivations. Why did these people do this? How did someone become pushed so much to the brink that this was their next option or this was their only means to an end?
Yeah.
You what know. Started their snap?
Yeah, ends to a mean is definitely something you see a lot in noir, right? You're just a block in the way to my path to victory.
Yeah.
So, like, you can still have a mystery in a noir, but a lot of them you'll find you're not there for the mystery as much as you're there for the thrilling element of the mystery.
Well,
not to solve it as much.
Yeah, and I mean, you're also there because you want to see what's kind of like horror where you get to see the darker aspects of people. Noir is very much the same thing in a different light. You're seeing people at their worst, people at their most conflicted. And I think that's part of the joy and the thrill of reading a noir book is because you're like, if I was in this situation, would I handle this the same way as, you know, this person did? If I had lost everything or if this had happened, would I make the same decisions or would I take the nicer route or a worse route?
Like Maltese Falcon is all about trying to find this idol, and then there's two mysteries in it. One is the idol real or not, and that seems to be the real mystery. But really, the side mystery is who killed Sam's partner. Mm-hmm. And although Sam's investigating this and he's making decisions, he's, you know, he'll start questioning a guy and he'll be using a method that you're just kind of like, what is he doing? Like, this is not normal. You know, he's literally like egging a guy on that could shoot him in the face. And he's just like, you're whatever. Yeah. Jerk. Look at you, newbie. Oh, you didn't even know how to handle a gun, you know? And even in the end, you know, he doesn't really solve one of the mysteries. They just kind of reveal, it's like, oh, here's the idol. Here's, you know, that. But he does kind of solve who killed his partner. But even then, he doesn't do it in a sense that I've solved the mystery. He brings that answer out of someone. Mm. You know, tell me the truth. I know the truth, but I want to hear it from you.
Sounds like a good literary device for writing the end of the story, too.
And if someone's interested in noir, definitely check out the classics, because it's fantastic reading them and just picking up on all these tropes that weren't tropes at the time.
Yeah.
You know?
Back then, they were the original things.
Like, you see him taking smoke after smoke and just trailing people and the lingo and talking to the hotel detective. Yeah, it's really cool to see these things all at once, isn't it? But you remember, you're there to see Sam more than you are to solve the mystery. You want to see, and as well as these characters he's chasing around, like, because you read this and you're like, how could anyone be like this? Like, he keeps tossing off the police. They keep coming over to his house, like, asking him questions. He's just like, you know, get out. And he lets them hit him. So he's like, ha, now you've hit me. Now you have to leave or else I get to complain, you know, and stuff like that.
I guess that kind of does fall under a trope at this point, but.
Well, it's just, it's the detective, the, you know, that kind of character has been overdone. And that's why it's also classic. As much as it is a trope, it's something that people look forward to. They easily recognize it, and just seeing an opening shot of a detective in his office with a scotch and a smoke immediately tells you what kind of movie or book this is going to be.
The Roger Rabbit setting.
Mm. Yeah, like, I think that's again why it's, you know, it's typical. That's why people think noir when they do that. And when I did the anthology, I put a bit of that in there. And of course, I let some of those stories in there, but I didn't want the whole thing to be that. Like, the first story we have is Yanis, and I just found it's just kind of that classic noir, is what it felt, you know. But then right after that, we've got another story that doesn't involve a detective. We've got Watts' story. There's no detective. There's no cops. There's a little bit of crime. But the main character in that is a cleaner, someone who you know, some, there, oh, there's a crime scene and I need to make sure my DNA is not here.
Yeah.
You can fix that for me, right? And so we follow that person. And then after that is Mary's story, where it's a bit of a play on the on Star Trek's holodeck.
Yeah. But, I mean, that just shows you the diversity of what you can do with the noir genre versus the stereotype of detectives and their worlds.
Well, it makes me feel a little better that the noir story I had started had nothing to do with detectives.
Hopefully there'll be a second one.
Well, if there is, at least we'll have a better idea how to actually do it.
Like you were talking about supernatural noir.
Yeah.
And that's what Husketeer's story is. It's dealing with your black dog.
Yeah.
Which is the dog that everyone has with them that's there that you don't realize is there until the moment before death, because they're there to open the gates of hell for you.
Yep.
Cute.
So what, and then in this one, it's really about a main character who can see their black dog and communicate with them.
You like getting to know your personal Grim Reaper, or at least not the Grim Reaper, but the guy that's going to drive the limo.
That's exactly it. And the dog knows when you're going to die, but they're not going to tell you.
But if the dog knows when you're going to die, then why would the dog stick around you all that time? Why wouldn't it just show up when you...
Because the dog can't leave you.
Hmm.
Read the story.
Yes, I actually read that too. So.
I'm really surprised you don't know this bit of mythology.
What?
I believe dog. It's Scottish.
Hmm.
Yeah, it is actually...
I'm not very well versed in Scottish mythology.
It's a legit thing. There's people who have seen the black dog when they're out walking in the countryside.
It explains the black dog pub names.
Yep.
Have a drink, it'll be your last. Oh dear.
No, but like I've got a story in there where it's about a guy just trying to do the right thing and he just slowly gets corrupted and pulled down until he breaks. Which actually that kind of reminds me of the second Batman movie, Dark Knight, because that's what happens to Harvey Dent, right? He's just this white knight that slowly gets corrupted and taken and taken until he breaks and becomes Two-Face.
Yeah.
Like it's very noir. Tony Gray Fox has a diesel punk story in there where, you know, there's a robot that killed things, but robots can't kill things, so what happened?
No. But, as you said, you know, and as I with supernatural noir, same thing. There was, there's so many different things you can do with it as long as you end up having that traditional element to it. Another thing that you've got...
And we should point out that what that is called these days is called neo-noir. Yeah. And some people get very picky about what neo-noir. Some people will say neo-noir is anything that wasn't made in the 40s, 50s. Some people will say, we never even mentioned like what is known as probably the greatest cyberpunk noir movie, which is Blade Runner.
Yeah.
But
didn't you guys bring that up before?
Maybe. I don't think we brought it up tonight.
Well,
no,
I
not,
was
not tonight, but in a...
Having read Do Androids Dream of Electronic Sheep, I mean, it's hugely noir. Mm-hmm. And so is Neuromancer. Like, they're both extremely noir stories. But that's part of it is because they do share that same characteristic with noir, where it's someone going up something that's larger than themselves. Something that, you know, normal people don't normally go up against. So
I love the second Joseph Gordon-Levitt's story in A Dame to Kill, which the Second Sin City movie, which I believe was written just for that movie, where he's just this gambling kid who, like, you know, he walks up to a slot machine, wins every single time, but really he's just there for a poker game
because
he just wants to beat the guy that runs the poker game, who I think is like a corrupted governor.
Yeah.
And he wins.
He's the big guy.
Yeah. He wins, and the guy's like, okay, take him out back. Beats him to an inch of his life. You know, now you've learned your lesson. Dump him on the streets. He goes, he recovers, and he comes back just to beat him again. And then, you know, just so he's like, so that, you know, they'll remember me as the guy who beat you twice.
Yeah.
Even though he dies right after that. The guy's like, well, I'm just going to kill you now and everyone will forget.
Well,
and he's like,
no, they're not, because you're going to be dead.
Exactly.
And then he just killed him. It was like, I sat there going like, actually, yeah, because who's going to know?
Who's
going to know? Because the thugs in the room aren't going to say a blessed thing.
Maybe some rumor will split up, but to that kid who died that day.
No one's going to know.
He doesn't care. He did what he wanted to do. And he did everything, even though he knew he would die.
Well, and the chick he hooked up with, he got her killed too.
Yeah, but that was his revenge, right? He's like, this is what I need to validate myself.
Barring the happier ending, Bunraku.
Oh, Bunraku.
Like, Bunraku. That is probably, as far as I would say a noir, that is a very unique noir, just on the fact that the way that it presents the two characters very much, just their personalities alone are so intriguing by who they are and what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's a complete revenge story, but it's all your stereotypical elements, but at the same time, you're like,
ninjas with battle axes. They do
it a certain way, like the whiskey, where it's like, you know, give me whiskey, but he doesn't say what kind of whiskey, so it's immediately the most expensive, you know, and the whole show up scene of like, this is the most expensive whiskey ever.
I still think that's just Woody Harrelson being a dick.
So what are the really noir elements in I Dream, Androids, Electric Sheep?
Well, it's just, you have the people that are going up against something larger than themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Also, in the case of that one, you have the detective trope that you see a lot in noir, where you have a guy whose his life sucks, he's trying to improve his life, and it seems like the entire world is going against him. And it's more so, you don't see it so much in the movie, but you have the concept of, because have any of you read the book?
No, no. I really need to. No. I really want to.
One of the things that they comment on is your status is shown by having real animals. So you have all these complexes, and on the roof is generally a pen where you have your animal. And depending on the rarity of the animal depends on what your status is. The thing is that you also have people who have made replicant animals that are so realistic. And the detective has a replicant, I think, sheep or a goat. And it breaks down, and he's like mortified that people are going to find out that it's a fake animal. So then, and it's just one of those things where like they offer him a real animal, like an almost extinct animal. And he's like, how the hell do you have this? And it's like this huge corporation. They must be ultra powerful because they have this almost extinct animal that's alive. And he's just like, oh my, it's God. It's like the owl. He's up, like, because in the movie that they have that owl. He's obsessed with the owl in the book because it's so much status to have it because there's no more trees. And it's just one of those things where as you read it, because he's so fixated on it because his life sucks and it's not about the money, because as soon as he gets money, he buys an animal because he wants his wife to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you feel for him because he's literally trying to do everything he can to be better in society, and society doesn't work that well. You can't just instantly get all this stuff. And then you have all the androids who are trying to fight back against, you know, being terminated, and they're living with the handicapped guy who doesn't really come across as fully handicapped in the movie, but in the book he has serious issues. And it's cyberpunk, it's dystopian, and that just works so well with the noir genre because they share all those elements.
Yeah, again, dystopia and noir just work so well because you already have this gloomy place that
everything's already broken,
people are already oppressed. So when you look at that trope of noir where you want to fight against something that's bigger than anything that one man really should be able to take on, there you go, dystopia.
Yeah.
And then the cyberpunk, I think that's just really cyberpunk and dystopia already fit together so well.
Oh yeah,
and it's just three settings that just blend so well, and that's why you see it.
Well, it's just the characters at their worst and all that. Just, it's so easy to do in dystopia.
That reminds me a little bit that we really need to go back and redo that cyberpunk episode.
Yeah.
Because yeah, there's a lot that we missed that actually parallels cyberpunk versus noir.
Well, having gone out and read a lot of cyberpunk and like Neuromancer, that is
I need to go back and re-listen to that book again, because I'd listened to it a while ago and it was good.
It's beautiful language, and it's just, and like nowadays it's so much taken down by your standard things, but back then, like your standard sci-fi genre was all rockets and aliens and Mars, and suddenly you have like Gibson coming along with this, like, here's this, here's what the future is really going to be. It is going to be a shithole. And you're just like, that, like, as a reader Star back Trek then, it's like fucking The Hobbit coming around and being like, suddenly fantasy is completely everything that we have today is because of The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings. Dwarves are dwarves, elves are elves, orcs are orcs because of The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings.
Well, thank
that you. Says something right there about the cultural impact of that.
It was like, you're also talking about Mars and space travel and everything like that, like, as far as science fiction goes. Think of Star Trek and how it's influenced all that stuff.
Exactly.
But coming back around to noir, it's, yeah, you have, cyberpunk is very good at, I think, exemplifying.
I think it's the perfect setting for a noir story solely because
versus
of that.
Versus the 40s.
I'm trying to remember what the actual title of the story I read was, but it was a roar submission. And they had a very, I'm not entirely sure it was noir, a very noir-like theme. You had, like, these cyber hackers, like, they all had the implants, and it was like space espionage kind of thing. Like, the one hacker that, like, will complete a gig, wipe his own memory so that he doesn't remember the crimes that he's done. And yeah. Money ends up in his account.
Yeah.
And then he's like, how did I get all this money?
No, I remember that.
He's just like, well, I sure got a lot of money now. Don't know how.
I must be a manhole.
I'd prefer to keep it that way. Well, he very obviously knew he was a hacker, just never.
If he got caught, he could have complete deniability. I have no idea what that is.
Which is really interesting to think about. Like, if he ever runs into, like, a situation he hasn't run into before, or, like, has had his memory wiped of it, he's just like, fuck. Just, like, doesn't remember how to do it at all.
I swore I know how to do this. No!
Well, remember when we commented on the cat piano?
Oh, the cat piano. I love the cat piano.
We're
love.
Like, it's already very noir because of the violent acts that are happening.
The violent acts, but like...
we're like... It would just be if they had just changed one detail, it would have been even better. And that would be like that the female cat, the singer, that she no longer sings or anything because it's too traumatic now from that, or something like that. Instead, it kind of has the happy ending where you know now she just sings for him because he saved her.
Yeah.
But
which,
like,
is still kind of touching because, you know, she can't. Maybe if they'd included, like, she only sings for me now because anywhere else is too painful or something like that.
It's still the bittersweet kind of ending, which does still lend itself to noir.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you can have a truly happy ending with noir stories. Do you think so?
What? Happy endings?
Yeah, happy endings in noir stories.
Yeah.
Like...
The other example I wanted to bring up is a movie called, I believe, A Cat in Paris. Let me double check that.
It's A Cat in Paris.
Yeah.
Is it A Cat in Paris?
Yeah.
I saw that movie, and I'm trying to remember.
It's on Netflix.
Yeah. So, A Cat in Paris, which is it G-rated or PG? I think it's PG.
I think it's a kid's movie.
It is. I haven't seen that. It's a movie from France, but you can watch it in English. It was on Netflix. It's probably still there. It's an animated movie.
Isn't that the one with the female cat with the white?
No, the cat's just a cat.
Okay.
It's a black cat. Basically, it's a single mom with her kid, and they have a cat. And the mom is single because her and her husband were detectives and they were going after this mafia crime boss and he killed the husband. And so now the mom is on a spiral for revenge.
Oh, that's a good thing to do with kids.
Yeah. Like, and this is all in a PG movie, which I watched it. And I'm just like, this is actually noir.
Dark.
It's not, it's on the edge between dark and family friendly, which was very cool to see. Because, like, it's, again, like, you see it's subtle. You know, she's not bloodthirsty for revenge, but she has these hallucinations because of it, because of the traumatic experience of losing her husband. Because she's so bent on revenge, her kid, spoilers, gets kidnapped by the thugs because she's not concentrating at home. There's the anti-hero of the thief, who's another character in this movie. He just got caught up in the wrong situation, and he ends up going, well, I'm going to help this kid out. The bad guy is so bent on trying to kill them and achieve his goals, that, you know, he's shooting, he's beating up his partners, and in the end, he ends up committing suicide because he's so caught up in trying to chase them down that he ends up with his own demise. And there are these small, slight, dark tones in this movie that's still, at the same time, PG and something that you could go show your kid.
This is why you don't feed a mouse a cookie.
Besides vampires.
Like, it's... I highly encourage people to watch this movie. It's a fantastic movie. It's got good parts. It's laugh. But the noir is in there. It's subtle, but it's still there, which is really kind of cool. And, of course, there's a happy ending because it's a family movie, you know? So, yeah, I think you can have happy endings. It's definitely not something you should do often. And they generally, if you're going to have an ending where it's not a bad ending, more often than not, the characters will have suffered in some sense. Mm-hmm. Or
and they just continue to subsist. Yeah,
they suffered, or there's some sort of trauma, or, you know, they've been taken lower a peg. It's very rare that they come out of a situation unscathed.
Going, golly gee willikers, that was awesome, let's do it again.
Exactly. Like, that is where I say, like, you know, it's very hard to do that right in a noir, if at all.
Yeah.
Like, in A Cat in Paris Surprise, they have a happy ending, and it ends, I think, with the family together for Christmas.
Gotcha now.
But, in the movie, the cat, like, because the cat is the kid's cat, the family cat, but occasionally at night, the cat sneaks out of home and becomes this cat burglar with the thief, the anti-hero, who helps them later.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah. And so when the kid's in danger, you know, the cat's like, come help, I think, but yeah.
Yeah, and the cat's like, hey, you, I'm not helping you lift one more thing till you help me out. My daycare boy is a little troubled.
But again, I think Cat in Paris is a great example of noir doing something different, because it's not very gritty. It's not, I don't want to say dumbed down, it's just less than
lighter.
Yeah, it's lighter enough that it's a family noir, which is totally weird and funny. You know.
That's true.
I'm looking at my shelf and I'm like, oh, Cowboy Bebop. Cowboy Bebop is so noir.
I really like the dark, gritty nature of noir.
See, this is why I think, like, you and Voice, honestly, should write more noir. Or you're probably writing it and not realizing it. Because I remember when I told you guys I was doing the anthology, you guys were like, oh, I don't know how to do that. I'm like,
no, I never said
your
that.
Stories are all about betrayal, and your stories always end in gritty, sad endings. They're already halfway there. Yeah. Well, him for sure was just like,
yeah.
Oh, okay, I guess so.
I'd have been more than happy to write a noir story for you. It was just a matter of time.
Mine all have too many happy endings. I couldn't do it.
I could do it.
Hopefully there'll be a second. We can all make it up. Like, for myself, the stories that I love most in noir are the ones where you see people so corrupted, doing things so horribly wrong, that when it finally is revealed who did it or why they did it, why they did it is usually the one that you're just like, holy crap! You're like, oh my goodness! In the second Black Sad book is an example of this, is the one story with the Nazi white supremacists, actually.
Well,
I don't know if I want to spoil it or not, but when you realize what the one girl has been doing since before the beginning of the story took over, you're just like, holy crap. Like, those are the ones I love, because it shows how far down the rabbit hole someone has gone to reach that end to the means that they would do horrible, horrible things to themselves, to the other people around them, just to get pity revenge.
Yeah.
Or what we would see as pity revenge, but to them is the only goal. Like, going back to the gambler, you know, he knew he was going to die. He didn't care.
Well, he felt kind of bad when the chick got taken out.
Yeah, he felt bad for her. She wasn't supposed to be involved. She was just the eye candy to distract them.
Yeah.
But for him, the end goal was, I'm probably going to die, but I just want to humiliate this guy before I do.
He probably would remember that. The big boss that the gambler took out?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I guess I like the colorful language on in noir. I mean, I enjoy happy endings far too much to really be a big noir fan. But
well, again, it's like, what do you classify as a happy ending for you? Is like the day is saved, everyone's happy?
No, I'm usually content if the characters.
Or you just don't want to be like, that's the end?
Yeah.
And then just feel horrible afterwards. Because yeah, that's a good noir.
That's a very good noir.
I don't like feeling like shit when I'm done reading a book. There's enough rotten stuff going on in life that I don't need to read a book for escapism to feel worse.
Mm-hmm. I think his name is William McHale. He's a self-pub, writes horror, but he wrote a Lovecraftian noir, mm-hmm. is what he called it. The end of the story, Cthulhu has risen, and his way of solving it is to take a missile launcher, which somehow he got, and basically fires it into a holding area, because somehow in the docking area, all the flammable objects are in one area, and then he hits it with a missile, which ends up lighting up the entire seaboard along the continent. Not just this area, the entire fucking continent, and kills Cthulhu that way. And I'm just like, this is the worst ending possible. Okay, so I'm like, he survives, everyone's happy, Cthulhu's gone, and I'm just like, that was Deus Ex Machina right there.
He killed Cthulhu.
He killed Cthulhu.
How do you kill that which does not die?
You light up an entire seaboard. Apparently all the material is just all in the... Yeah.
So, you know, if you're looking for something that, like, a little bit of darker stories, usually more character-driven, because it's usually, again, it's the motives of people, I find, that drive the best noirs. You know, you can have the thrillers. Those are definitely fit in, you know, good action scenes and that, but it really is what I find the most is the characters that drive it, because they're the ones that are pushing against the world or, you know, pushing against the enemy or watching them spiral downwards down the drain hole.
Yeah.
So buy my book.
So if you are into noir, buy Ocean's book.
Yeah, no, again, like, I'm really happy with Inhuman Acts. I'm happy with the stories. We have it. I think there's a good variety of everything in there, which, you know, when I step back and look at it, I'm really happy that that's what it is. You know, I don't think every story really has that depressing an ending. There's a few that are more depressing than others. Most of them seem pretty neutral now that I think about it, but, you know, some are darker, some are lighter. Anyways, but the book will come out at Rainforest weekend, so the end of September weekend. If you're there at Rainforest, pick it up. There will be myself and a bunch of the authors will actually be there too if you want to get it signed. There's actually a book release party, which is really cool. We'll be there sharing the stage with Ryan Campbell because he's releasing a book as well.
Yeah. Sweet.
I think that'll be fun.
I don't know. Buy some more and I'll make a second. I don't know.
I'll be buying my copies.
And while you're at RF, pick up
Abandoned Places.
Woohoo!
And don't forget to check out the Rainforest Anthology this year.
Get also, that as well. Roar and Fang.
What the hell? Buy all our books.
And Will the Alpha 2.
Yeah, Will the Alpha 2. And Dungeon Grind will be out.
Yeah, definitely pick up Dungeon Grind. I wrote a good one in that one.
I like it.
But you won't find any of your stories in Inhuman X.
I know.
Shake my fist at you all.
It would have been a really good RF for me if that was the case.
Also, if you're at Rainforest, we'll be there. We're on our own individual panels throughout the weekend, as well as we have our own, where we'll be doing a live podcast. So if you want to jump in, join the discussion, come and show up. And also, as I mentioned last episode, application should now be open for Roar. Or the Regional Anthropomorphic Writing Retreat, which will be in California, hosted by Kyle Gold. And I think we're still figuring out who the special other guest instructor will be. But if you are interested in this or you want to find more information, you can go to application.rar.community. It's going to be really great. there will be, I sadly will not be there. But, you know, it'll be half writing, half learning, honing your craft. Check it out if you're really interested in going on a writing retreat that's actually more directed to anthropomorphic writing, if you can make it. And then it is at the end of January, I believe, because it follows, it doesn't follow, it's right before FC, Further Confusion. So basically you fly in the week before FC, go to the writing retreat, and then you can all go to Further Confusion right afterwards. Yeah, check it out.
Excellent. If you have any questions, comments, suggestions, topics you want to see us do, contact us at our new email at
fangsandfonts@gmail.com.
Or contact us on Facebook. Or contact us on Twitter. Or on For Affinity. Or So Furry. Or God knows where else at Fangs and Fonts.
Are we on So Furry?
Yes.
Okay, I forget.
Does anyone want to manage those?
So,
just because I'm so behind on doing it.
So, come find us, comment. We really want to hear your suggestions, comments, criticisms, and show ideas.
Our email has been empty far too long.
And good night, everybody.
Night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night,
good night, everybody.
I guess we pretty much talked about noir. That is a terrible way of going back in.
Terrible way.
Well, anyone else? Well. Well.
So,
well.
So if you're looking for some.
Shut up! Not you. Continue.
I'm waiting for people to stop laughing. Okay.